Small Town Podcast is made possible by generous support from the Georgia Municipal Association. GMA supports Georgia cities. Small Town Podcast is supported by Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company. Consolidated Pipe is a full-line supplier of products for the water, wastewater, and natural gas industries, and they serve utilities and public works departments in cities, large and small, every day. They're the exclusive distributor of Master Meter AMI-AMR technology. As a family-owned company with a legacy that began in 1960, let Consolidated Pipe show you that they are dedicated to service.
I hereby call this episode to order.
Hey, small towners, it's Mayor Matt Seal from the great city of Osceola. And thanks for joining me for another episode as we begin Season 2 of Small Town Podcast. Today, we go to the Metro Atlanta area to visit a small town that has managed to keep its small town charm in the midst of incredible growth in the last few decades. And we get to talk with a small town mayor who has a remarkable story of overcoming what life has thrown at her and becoming a leader for a community far from where she grew up, as well as an entire association of local government leaders. We're going to go talk with Mayor and current president of the Georgia Municipal Association, Linda Blechinger, in the small town of Auburn, Georgia. Come go with me. Growing up in coastal Georgia, I only thought I lived in a small town. Soon as I graduated high school, I moved to the big city of Atlanta for college and to start my life. My life is a journey, and I ended up in Osceola, Georgia. Population 3,400. We've got two traffic lights here. We're not looking to get a third anytime soon. Some years later, the people of Osceola made me their mayor. Man, I love living in a small town. Other folks do too. This is the Small Town Podcast, and I'm your host, Mayor Matt Seal of the great city of Osceola, Georgia. Small Town Podcast is supported by the Southern Mercantile. Visit southernmercantile.com for a blog about small town living and an online store with a selection of carefully curated goods. The Southern Mercantile. Simple living, Southern charm. All right, I'm now in the conference room at the City Hall of Auburn, Georgia, and I'm joined by the mayor of Auburn, Georgia, who happens to also be the current reigning GMA president, Ms. Linda Blechinger. Madam Mayor and Madam President, thanks for joining me on Small Town Podcast.
Well, thank you, and welcome to Auburn, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. We'll start out like we always do, but as I mentioned to you, I think your accent, even just now, probably gives away the answer to the question. Were you born in Auburn, Georgia?
I don't know why people question that. I have no idea. You know, I was born in Manhattan, New York. Yes.
Life there for a long time, or what was the journey there?
I actually grew up out on, if you're from New York, then you would just say the island.
Yeah, you're going to have to give geography lessons.
You would just say the island, which is Long Island. Mm-hmm. So where I grew up was a beach town, very small. Took the train a lot into New York City. Really, you know, if you live there, you don't usually drive. You take the train.
There's a lot of people that do. There's cars everywhere every time I see it on TV.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing. Those are usually out-of-towners.
Because all the locals take the train.
That's right.
So you graduated high school there?
Actually, I received my GED. I left home when I was 15. I had a mother, unfortunately, that was mentally ill and was in and out of foster homes and an orphanage, and my mother was very abusive, and so I left at a very early age to survive, and I did.
And I don't want to dig in too much, but kind of want to explore the story, because I remember you actually talking about some of this in your acceptance speech when we swore you in as GMA president just recently.
Yeah.
That had a huge impact on who you've become.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, because I stayed first in an orphanage and then in a foster home, by the time I met my mother, I wasn't that maternal child link really didn't ever happen between us. So yeah. To me, she was a woman who literally kidnapped me out of my foster home. Mm. And in those days, the mother usually, you know, kept the children.
Yeah.
And so my mother and father had been divorced for many years, and nobody questioned it. And so, unfortunately, she was very mentally ill and a drug abuser and was abused us. I have five sisters. Two were given up for adoption. They were twins. So my story was a little, each one of our stories are a little bit different.
Sure.
Yeah. So, but as my mother became more and more violent is when I realized that, you know, she actually would drug us. And
wow.
So I knew I had to leave. So I struck out on my own.
You said you were 15 when you left?
Actually, when I left, I was 14, but I stayed in Rocky Point.
Okay.
And still attended school. So I was 15 when I realized I needed to get far, far away. So flew out to New Mexico to meet my father. That did not turn out well. He was still an alcoholic at that time. So I left there 2 weeks later and went to California and started working three jobs and put myself, well, I took my GED.
Mm-hmm. So you got your GED out in California. What,
yes.
What part of California were you?
Oh, I was way south.
Okay.
Yeah, I was in Vista, California, which if you went there would almost be at the Mexican border.
Okay.
Yeah, beautiful, absolutely stunning place. But so I took my GED and lied about my age and worked three jobs, put myself through cosmetology school, and earned a pretty good living at that point in California. It was a pretty good job to have. Came back to New York when I was about 20. So still did the same thing I was doing, you know, vocationally. And then one day just decided I'm not going to do this anymore. And I quit and looked in the newspaper, Help Wanted ad, and there was something called a material control agent. Had no idea what that was, but I applied for the job. This Greek man, the company has since closed just a couple of years ago, so this Greek man, George, called me in for the interview, and he said, "Why are you interviewing for this job?" And I said, "Listen, I'm going to make you a deal. If you just let me work here doing the job that you're advertising for a week, if you don't like me at the end of the week, you don't owe me one thing. But if you do, you need to hire me. And this is what I want." And
how could he say no to that?
At the end of the week, that's exactly what he said. He said, "Well, I can't say no to that."
Right.
And at the end of the week, he hired me and hired me into a management level position. I stayed in that field of defense manufacturing and just kind of rose up through the ranks in there until I met my husband, Dan.
And that was in New York still?
That was in New York, yeah.
And since you didn't know, but obviously figured it out along the way, at least enough in that week, what is a material control agent?
Yeah.
What do they do?
It was really interesting to me. I'm kind of a big picture person, so I like to know the big picture and know, you know, how this company's functioning, what's the purpose, and all of that. So I kind of did my investigation about that. And the material control part of it was literally all the material that came into the building and then how it left in assembly. So I was over every part of that,
okay,
from ordering and it coming in to it being stocked to it being issued to a product being built and sent out. And it was for Grumman.
Mm-hmm.
So it was all defense contracting, which meant that I had to go through certain clearances and
right,
be able to look at blueprints and, you know, that kind of thing. So I really enjoyed it. It was a challenge, and it was good. I enjoyed it very much. Yeah.
And you said you did that until you met your husband.
Yes. When I met Dan, it was a new company. I just started working there. Dan worked in IT, so we started dating. He and I are very similar. He's also from New York, but upstate New York, all the way up by Lake Ontario.
All the way up.
8-hour drive from where I was. Straight north. And so I called him my Canuck, but we hit it off and we're married just 5 months later.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was 27 at the time. So Dan worked for the company that we worked at. They had a plant down in Peachtree City, mm-hmm. which was really kind of just starting at that point. You know, that was 29 years ago.
Okay.
And so he was trying to convince me to move to Georgia. And, of course, I knew nobody in Georgia.
Right.
I had one experience of going through Georgia. It wasn't a good one. And
we won't ask what city.
And so, well, I'll just tell you that it was driving down to go to Disney World, and we happened to stop at a Kentucky Fried Chicken in a town that had paper mills. So you know what that stench is like.
Yep.
And so that was literally the only memory I had of Georgia. I was like, no, I don't think I want to move to Georgia.
The whole state doesn't smell like that.
Yeah,
just a few. And then where it does that smells like money to the community.
Yeah, so exactly. That's exactly right. And and even since that time, I mean, things have changed
sure.
so much, technology and all.
But if that's your one impression of an entire state the size of Georgia.
Yeah, not good. But, you know, on the other hand, people, almost the rest of the U.S., when you say you're from New York, they think immediately you're from New York City.
Right, right.
Which is like a pinhead, you know,
right.
compared to the entire state
compared
of
to everything
New York.
On that eight-hour drive up to almost.
Yes, it's almost all agriculture,
yeah.
the state of New York. So, you know, it's very interesting. In any case, so we had friends that ended up moving down to Georgia, so that was my convincer. I could go down and visit our friends.
Okay.
So that's what we did. I was pregnant at the time. Dan and I were married. I was pregnant. And Dan really said to me, Linda, you know, the decision's yours. If you want to continue to work, we can stay on the island. But if you don't want to work and raise our children, we can't afford to stay on the island. You know, we'll never be able to buy a house here, I mean, for 20 years, you know. And so I thought about that, and of course everything was very familiar to me there on the island. And so when we came down to visit Chase and Debbie, Debbie took me around and showed me Georgia.
Yeah.
And I saw it was actually looked so familiar to what I was used to. And the cost of living was incredibly less than Long Island. New York's expensive to begin with, but Long Island, New York is, you know, crazy because, of course, real estate is limited. And you're surrounded by beach, you know, no matter which way you go. So anyway, so I told Dan, that I'd be willing to take a look around and see if there was something that I liked. And we did. We found something, and we chose Georgia.
And originally you said the place where he had the job was Peachtree City. Is that where you moved to?
So we lived in Noonan. And at the time, Peachtree City was kind of just starting.
Mm-hmm.
And so we fired five real estate agents because they kept bringing us to Peachtree City. And, you know, at that time, Stepford Wives had just come out.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept thinking, this is a little too planned for me. I'm kind of a bit of a free spirit. I'm not sure I can deal with this, you know. And so we moved to Noonan, which was a teeny tiny little town at that point. They closed the doors Wednesday afternoons at 12 o'clock. It was dry. I mean, there were really, there was a barbecue place you could go to. There was one food shopping store. It was called Piggly Wiggly.
We have one of those in Osceola.
Hey, listen, at the time, you know, coming from New York, we didn't have cell phones at the time, right?
Right,
with
right.
our cameras. So I actually went and bought a camera so I could take a picture of the name of this store, get it developed, and send it back to all my folks in New York and say, this is where I'm shopping.
And I'm sure they got a kick out of it.
They did. It was so funny, yeah. But everybody was very kind to us, and all three of our boys were born in Noonan. And we lived there for 5 years, and then Dan got a job at Scientific Atlanta on the north side,
mm-hmm.
so we moved up on this side.
And that's when you moved to Auburn?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So Peachtree City and Noonan roped you into Georgia, and now you've made Auburn home.
Yes, and we've been here over 20 years, yeah.
Now, what made you decide, because there's plenty of communities in this area north of Atlanta, what made you decide Auburn?
Well, it was partly Dan. He grew up on a beef cattle farm,
mm-hmm.
And was raised by his grandparents. And so he really wanted our boys to have that same experience. but he's an IT guy and didn't want to work a farm. He knows what that work is like.
Right.
And I told him, I will never be your farm girl, so don't ever think that's going to happen. So we wanted to get out far enough where there was still farmland and agriculture and quiet at nighttime, which I was pretty much used to that also. So we kind of kept going. Like 316 basically ended right where Auburn was at that time.
Then, yeah.
And yeah, it was really funny. We were driving up and the sun was setting and we were with our real estate agent. And, you know, the further we were driving out, the more it was just woods. And then it was just woods and no streetlights. And then I see this road end, and I'm like, oh my gosh, you brought me out here to kill me. Nobody will ever find me. I know the truth, you know? And she was hysterical laughing. So Dan said, I really want you to see this place. I think you're going to love it. And as we drove around, it just has these beautiful rolling hills and great trees, great canopy. As we drove around the city, I could picture us raising our three boys here and being a part of a real community. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we really prayed about it and both of us decided this was it.
So you wanted that rural feel, that small town feel, but obviously still close to, you know, the metro area.
Yeah, had to be close to Atlanta.
Yeah, he's working for Scientific Atlanta. So what year was that you moved to Auburn?
Now, let me think about this. So it was 1994.
Okay.
We moved to Auburn, yeah.
At some point between 94 and now, obviously you got involved in city government in Auburn, but I'm willing to bet you got involved in some other ways. So talk about how you got involved in not just living in Auburn, but really being a part of the community.
Yeah, well, I was very active with my boys. Derek went to public school for 2 years, and then our middle son, DJ, passed away. He had heart disease, and Derek and DJ were 13 months apart. Very, very close. And then David and DJ were only 16 months apart, so three little doorsteps. And the school at the time, you know, totally different administration now, but at the time they wanted to promote Derek and have him skip a grade. And I wanted him to be with his classmates because he had just lost his brother.
Yeah.
And I thought it, emotionally,
those relationships,
that was more important. And so I decided, well, I'll homeschool him for a year and, you know, we'll just see how it goes. And he'll have time to heal. And we had some counseling and things that we went through as a family. And he loved it. He thrived in that environment. Derek has always been a self-learner, loves to read, to this day, loves to read. And so he actually went through 2 grades in 1 year. We never took a break for a summer.
Wow.
He just loved it.
Yeah.
And so I decided, I think I might want to try doing this again for the next year and see how it goes. And so we did. And Derek actually was homeschooled until 10th grade. And then he went to a college prep school, graduated early, and went on to college and was very successful. And my son David ended up being on the Asperger's scale when he was young. And so I was actually driving him all over the place for special teaching from professionals.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't feel like it would be a good fit in our school system. They weren't really equipped to deal with him. He's very high functioning, but in the beginning, those high functioning kids really need all the input then to help them get over that hump. And so spent a lot of time in cars driving around, bringing him to specialists. But David is fully functioning adult, 26 years old, on his own, very successful, manages a gym, is totally into health and fitness, and wants to open his own gym, which he will do in the next couple of years. So very, very different stories for both my boys, but both of them are doing well. Very well.
So obviously you're a very proud mother, because I was asking what you did to get involved in your community.
Well, so because my boys took up so much of my time.
Right, in the first
several years
really here
was really all
them.
Of my time into them. Auburn didn't really have a children's park.
Yeah.
And that really started me off. I got a flyer in our water bill that said, we're starting a Parks and Rec board, and anybody interested? And so, of course, me, I did all my research before the first meeting
And walked in with a bunch of notes ready to go.
I did. I had a notebook. I had all my notes written out. I knew all the property the city already owned. I mean, you know, came in and said,
did you get elected chairman like right away?
I did. First meeting. I did.
By the note taking, I predicted that.
So actually, we got 5 parks built.
Wow.
In the city, which is amazing. Then the guy that was the head of that for the council, representative for the council, Billy Parks, was giving up his seat on council to run for commissioner seat at the county level. And he came to me and asked me if I would run for his seat. And I said, ooh, I don't know about that. And I went back and talked to my husband, and we prayed about it, and talked to my pastor, and talked to my boys, because I'm either all in or all out.
Yeah.
And so we decided yes, and I won the seat and served for a year. And the mayor that was serving at the time had a lot of health issues, and he told me he wasn't going to run again. He said, Linda, I really think you should run for my seat. And I was like, oh, my word, are you kidding me? I'm not sure I want to do that.
And that was after 1 year of reluctant council service.
Yes. Yeah. And
now, how many years were you the chair of the Parks and Rec Board before
1 year.
Okay.
And then 1 year on council.
Okay.
And now you're being asked to run for mayor.
Everyone thinks you're a quick learner. You only need 1 year before it's time to move on to something else, I guess.
The city at the time was infamous for 2 things. One was every time I mentioned Auburn, oh, yeah, it's a speed trap. That's where I got my ticket. So that was one. But the second one was the fights that went on during council meetings, which I got to experience, of course, firsthand.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I brought all of my great ideas, you know, about parks to the city council and saw people yelling and screaming at each other and citizens and councilmen and the mayor and all the TV cameras were there, you know. I mean, it was just crazy. And really, that's what gave me pause. I thought, what in the world am I stepping into?
Right.
I'm not sure about this. And so again, Dan and I prayed about it. And I really, when I served on council, I really began to see a vision for the city of Auburn. I began to understand what the resources were. And, you know, then I started questioning, wait a minute, why aren't we really growing as fast as we should be growing? And found out it was because of lack of infrastructure. And so, you know, you find out these things as you're
right
pacing along very
sure.
quickly.
Well, and asking a lot of questions, because that right there is the key.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
People that'll ask questions and then actually dig into the answers,
yes.
which you have a demonstrated history of
yeah.
doing your research. So,
yes. I'm an investigator.
Exactly,
I'm going to investigate everything.
That's right.
And when I was on council, I immediately got hooked into GMA. I mean, just immediately. And that is really what opened my eyes to what the city was doing wrong. We did not have a city administrator. We only had a city clerk who actually was an acting city clerk. She had no formal training. And there were reports that weren't being reported. We weren't having audits done. I mean, and I started finding out this stuff at GMA.
Mm-hmm.
And I would come back to the city and say, are we doing
right.
these things? You know,
you go to these classes and you learn new things.
Yeah.
It seems like you should have already known if you've been elected.
And anyway, so I ran for mayor with the idea of, well, at least with my management background, I knew how to pull people together and to kind of come up to par, you know, where we need to be. So the first thing I talked to my council about was changing our charter so that we could have a city administrator. And they agreed.
Without a fight?
Really without a fight.
You mentioned that.
I had one council member that just could not understand why we would ever need a city administrator. And when I showed him all the reports that should be done that we had not been doing, and said, you know, I'm not equipped to do these reports. Are you? And he said, no. I said, okay, then we need
there
a city administrator.
Motion carries.
Yeah, exactly. So we hired Ron Griffith, who was actually retiring from his work, as he did almost everything in government. He had his MBA, but out of Cobb County, and had all the experience that we really needed, because I knew all of our departments needed to come up, you know, a couple levels, and just the way we ran the city. And Ron really was a perfect fit, just perfect. and really helped us. And we got there pretty quickly. When I ran for mayor, we were the first city in Georgia. We actually made national news to be the first city with an all-female mayor and council.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so we tease a lot about that because in 2 years, we got a lot of work done. We really did, and that's the truth.
Got all us men out of the way and get some stuff done.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, to make sure the timeline's right, now you what year did you, because I don't think we said a year, so what year did you first run for council, and then you said a year later you ran for mayor?
So if I'm thinking correctly, it was 2003 I served on Parks and Rec, 2004 on council, 2005 for mayor. And, you know, but kind of one of the first things that I wanted to do is get my council together and just say, we get to choose how we're going to represent our citizens and, in fact, the city. Do we want to continue to function the same way that it's been functioning, or do we want to have a good reputation? Do we want to really focus on the work that's at hand? And we're never going to all agree on anything, you know, maybe once or twice we will, but for the most part, we all have different opinions, different backgrounds, and I think that's a good thing. But let's not hash it out at council meeting in front of everybody.
Yeah.
You know, let's try to hash those things out. We have two meetings, as you probably do. We have a workshop and a business meeting. And we changed the date so that they're 2 weeks apart. So I said, you know, at work session, let's hash it out then at work session and really kind of lay all our cards out on the table, our concerns, and then give it 2 weeks. Because if we have questions, we want to know whether it even should move to the business meeting or not for a vote.
Right.
If we still have questions unanswered, we'll just put it on the next workshop.
Sure.
You know? And so I think that helped everybody to feel like they had a real voice, that they were going to be listened to, and that it wouldn't move to the business meeting until we were really ready for a vote.
It's,
you know?
It's amazing. There are several communities where some of that infighting, well, yeah. I guess it's outfighting because it's all happening out in the public, and that makes the newspaper. And I'm sure for some people that might actually be the goal, is to make sure that their name gets put in the newspaper, you know, being against the mayor or this other council member or whatever. But the damage that can do to your city, especially in a smaller town where people might be looking to come invest and start or grow a business there, that they're looking at the newspapers, and it's you got to be careful what you're putting in there.
From beginning to end, because when you think about your own citizens, if your council is divided and you're constantly bickering and fighting, how many volunteers do you think you're going to have coming in?
Why should I go help those guys?
Yeah, I mean, we were trying to establish a really beautiful museum telling the history. I'm a big history buff. And when I found out the history of Auburn, I just thought, wow, we need to tell the story. This is a great story.
Yeah.
And we had citizens that were holding on to, you know, really important pieces that told our history, but wouldn't donate it to the city because the city was constantly fighting.
Right.
And they just didn't feel like there was that stability that they could entrust these kind of treasures to, you know.
That's the key word, entrust.
Yeah.
If you're giving your, whether it's volunteering your time or your energy, you know, your actual, you know, personal things of historical value or community significance. Yeah, they want to feel like they're entrusting it to something worth trust.
Yes, yeah. And, you know, so as time has gone on, this is my third term, and we moved from a small, teeny tiny museum to a house that's one of our original trainmen house that is now our museum. And we have so many things that are given to us by citizens, we actually rotate our items out. And you may have seen when you first walked in an old gas pump from about 1903 in front of City Hall that was just donated last week. And the owner of that gas pump, his father used to own a gas station here,
right,
and that
here
was the original pump.
Wow.
He restored it for a couple $1,000s. And donated it to the city. So it doesn't...
he didn't just hand it to you to have you restore it. He restored it and then
restored
it.
Yeah. So it's really been great. It's been a great journey. We've done a living history, which is making sure we're interviewing our older citizens that know, that lived the history, you know, of the city. And so we're compiling that, and that will be in our museum. It will be something that you can just press a button and you will hear different people tell this story from their point of view, being a child, or they're talking about their parents or their grandparents being here. Yeah.
That's so neat.
It is. I'm very excited about that project.
I want to keep talking about Auburn, but I did want to go back because you already mentioned GMA. And obviously, when we talked at the beginning, you're the current reigning president of the Georgia Municipal Association. I've never been able to interview a current president because I've only been with GMA a short few years.
Yeah.
But all of the presidents so far, the towns they represent are too big to be on Small Town Podcast.
Yeah.
We did finally get Boyd Austin on the infrastructure episode because I expanded that. So, Boyd, that was for you. But talk more about that. You said you got involved in GMA immediately.
Yes.
I assume at the district level and also at the national level. So talk about some of the things you've been involved with there. And obviously, you're pretty much involved in every single board or panel or anything now at your current role.
Yes. Well, the very first thing was just starting to take classes to just understand how a city runs. And I had a million questions. And I found that the staff was so great at sitting me down and just answering questions. I mean, I could literally call them on the phone and say, this is what we have going on, and I'm not sure, where do I go? Who do I talk to? And they would point me in the right direction, and that's just invaluable.
It's both comforting and a little humbling that staff up in that building knows more about how to run a municipal government than we do, and we're the elected officials.
Yeah, but you know,
that's been such a huge thing,
there's really no prerequisite.
Right.
For becoming an elected official.
Right, right.
I mean, if you live in the state and you've been, for us, in the city longer than 5 years, I think, you can run for any, you know, office.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always thought that, I mean, there is a requirement that every elected official takes that first course.
The new elected officials.
Newly elected. Yeah. But then you're not required to take anything else after that. I've always thought that it should be required to maintain a certain amount of hours of training every year if you're an elected official, because it's critical information. You're making decisions about, you know, we're building a reservoir, for Pete's sakes, you know. We're literally spending millions of dollars on this project. And
you're in charge.
Yes, you know. And so, yeah, of course, you have your, you know, engineers that you hire and all of that.
But they're looking to you for that final decision.
But yes, I mean, it's really driven by the elected officials.
Yeah.
And so I really do. I feel pretty strongly about that if you run for office, if you were hired by a business, you would be expected to stay on top of your game and know all the latest and all the newest technology coming out and how to use it and what to do. And I just, for the life of me, don't understand why that's not a requirement for all elected officials.
There's a lot of industries that require annual, education.
Yeah.
Continuing education in a lot of industries.
Yeah, GMA was my lifeline. I called them lot. They knew me really well because I was calling them a lot. Then I started understanding the boards, different boards that they had, and I served on community development because it was my passion and really began to then connect, we have over 500 cities in the state of Georgia, and there's a whole bunch of cities that are small cities, and we're all dealing with a lot of the same issues. We should really be talking to each other.
Yeah.
And so, you know, GMA actually started that, you know, small cities getting together and talking, larger cities getting together and talking, and found out that there are so many similarities and ways that you can address issues that somebody else has already done it. They've been through it, so why reinvent the wheel, you know?
Exactly.
I mean, and then all the resources that are out there. I mean, really, the state of Georgia has a ton of resources to help us as we're trying to grow our communities and make sure that we're well-balanced and healthy. You know, you can grow and be really unhealthy in that growth.
Yeah.
Or you can grow and make sure that you're staying healthy.
Yeah, I think they call some things smart growth and some things are just growth.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, the city of Auburn's been a bedroom community, meaning our residential is much heavier than our retail, commercial, industrial all of these years. And before the housing crash, we were right on the brink of starting to change that. And then everything, of course, you know, fell to pieces for a number of years. And now we're right back where we were then.
Mm-hmm.
But we took advantage of money that we had in the bank And the city of Auburn used that money to put infrastructure in the ground, needed water and sewer, and really started preparing for, we knew the growth was coming because right. we're right in between part of, actually part of the city of Auburn's in Gwinnett. Mm-hmm. Used to.
That's right. You're one of the cities that are in two different counties.
That's right. And it used to be we were all in Gwinnett until they created Barrow County, and then they split off a large portion of Auburn, and so we're mostly in Barrow County. Mm-hmm. So really, we have growth coming from Athens. We're exactly smack dab in the middle of the commute from Atlanta to Athens. So we
You're
have
the
growth
point.
Coming from both directions.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so doing that prep work allowed for the growth you'll have to be smart growth.
Yes. And of course, we did, when I first came into office, we were in the midst of our 10-year comprehensive plan. Mm-hmm. Now we're in the midst of the second one
right.
that I'm involved in.
Yeah.
And we took it a step further and said, this is, you know, me with my background and training, that you need a blueprint. It's nice to know what you'd like to have, but you need a blueprint for how you're going to get there.
Yeah.
And so we hired an agency to come in and give us the how to do it. And we've accomplished a lot of those first kind of check marks that we needed to have in place. And so now that we're doing in our second comprehensive plan, 10-year planning guide, we're using the foundation that we laid from that last 10-year comprehensive plan to now do this one. And it's great because, as I told you, we have 250 homes in a mixed-use development already started coming yeah. in as you come into the city on 29-8, and we have another one that will break ground next year.
You actually mentioned, because on our recent episode about infrastructure, I got you yeah. to comment on the importance of funds programs, CDBG, LMA
yes.
at the state level. And when you talked about the population, you said the population of Auburn, I think you said it was about 7,000, is that right?
Yeah, it's inching up close to 8 now.
And because of those developments,
yeah.
I think you said 4 different developments that'll happen
yes.
pretty quickly
yes.
in about 4 to 5 years, you'll
yeah.
probably double in population, you'll
yes.
be at 14,000.
Yeah.
So it's a really good thing that I'm interviewing you now, because 3 or 4 years from now, you couldn't be on Small Town Podcast.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
you're growing your way out of
that's
a small
exactly
town
right.
by our definition here, at least.
Yeah.
So you've gotten so much out of GMA, but
yes.
also you've served. So on your yes. On your climb to the top, people may not know this unless they're involved with GMA, but you've been the leader of the Legislative Policy Council,
yes.
and before that, the Federal Legislative
yes.
Policy Council,
yeah.
and now you're the president. So what do you feel like you, because you've been so engaged, as
yeah.
as so many before you have as well,
mm-hmm.
what do you feel like you've accomplished, and what do you hope to do? You're at the beginning of your one-year term, and then, of course, it doesn't end there, because
yeah.
every time we have a board meeting of any kind, there's a row of people that are past presidents.
That's right. The board of, board
so
of
they
directors.
They stay very engaged
yeah.
in that, and that's good to see. So
the board of directors, if you are a past president,
right.
you automatically
right.
are on that board, as well as the executive
right.
Committee. So, yeah, so you stay very actively involved. Let's see. You know, being a part of GMA and seeing how, thankfully, they have morphed and grown themselves over the years to the more current needs
mm-hmm.
of what cities are going through and experiencing. It's been really kind of fascinating to me to see how this Georgia Municipal Association has to really stay 2 steps ahead of what it is that's coming down the road. So, you know, our legislative session ends. The lobbyists for GMA are already working on what
right.
the next session is going to look like and what our issues are going to be that we're dealing with. And so that has been one of the things I think that I admired so much about GMA, is that they understand that, no, they have to stay on the forefront of what it is that's happening and going on and always in the mix. And so they don't just rely on themselves. They're, you know, part of National League of Cities. We have a
mm-hmm.
great relationship with them. And, of course, Carl Benson Institute.
Right.
We do almost all of our training through them. And just also the college systems and school systems. I mean, things that you wouldn't normally think, you know, this Georgia Municipal Association would necessarily be involved in.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the opioid crisis. Well, GMA started talking about that 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And cities, leaders were saying, no, we're dealing with it in our communities. Our small cities have meth labs in them, you know? And so that kind of, I felt like, really brought the conversation to a national level, because we are part of National League of Cities,
that's right.
You know? You talk about sex trafficking, that's another one that, listen, when we started hearing about locally, massage shops were being used for sex trafficking in some of our larger cities. When we sat around, I'll never forget it, the first time we sat around and talked about massage parlors, should they really be regulated? And we started hearing the stories from mayors and council people that were saying, wait, we don't think you really realize what's going on behind the scenes. And they started talking about, you know, the sex trafficking of young children, boys and girls.
Here's what our local law enforcement are dealing with on an increasingly regular basis.
And it's only because we have that forum that we get to hear all of this, and you realize that, oh, we need to be on top of this. We need to do something about this, join forces, you know, and do something about this. Same thing with dropout rate, you know, for our kids. So talking about the school systems, I mean, it's just a plethora of information. And the more we have the conversations, the more we realize, oh, this is starting to bubble up. This is happening throughout our state. And we can be proactive.
Yeah.
We can start really making a difference on those things. So when you think of, you know, being trained for your city, yes, of course, you're being trained for your city. But it expands your horizons to understand, no, we're a part of a much bigger picture, and we can actually have influence to help situations that we maybe weren't even aware. We read a story here and there, it was popped up in the newspaper, it was a news story, but now we're hearing that, oh no, wait, we have 20 cities here that are saying they're all dealing with that?
Yeah.
Wait, we need to look at that, you know? So GMA is really on the forefront of all of those things. I mean, they have so many irons in the fire at one time, but it's because they realize that these are real-life issues. Cities are dealing with real-life issues. Our citizens are the ones that make up the majority. In cities, the majority of the population of the state of Georgia. Therefore, we not only need to keep our ear to the ground and hear what's really going on, but we have a voice. And when that voice comes together and says, hey, pay attention, legislators, either at the local, I'm talking about state level, or federal level, it has a huge impact. I mean, huge impact. So I really am hoping that other elected officials understand that, yes, your city is important, but you're part of a much bigger picture, and your city's part of a much bigger picture. I don't care if you have a citizenry of 1,000, you're part of a much bigger picture.
Well, you're still part of that bigger voice. The voices are stronger when they're together.
Yes, yes. And I love that GMA says, you know, that most of the cities in Georgia are small cities.
Yeah.
So
it's close to 80% that have a population of less than 10,000. And that's why I picked that number to talk about, you know, small town, and realizing that, wow, that's the majority of the number of cities. Obviously, the bigger cities have such huge populations. They're overwhelmingly, you know. Let me switch a little bit. I want to do some get to know you questions, and then we'll talk a little more about your great city of Auburn, Georgia. But just for those who maybe don't know Linda Blechinger, maybe people that thought they did, they're going to learn something new today. So first question, do you have or have you ever had a nickname?
If I do, it's behind closed doors.
So not one that you're aware
not
of?
Not one that I'm aware of, no.
Nothing. Oh, okay.
Sorry.
You know what? For a person that didn't have a nickname that they knew of, that was the best possible answer.
Well, there you go.
All right, so if you had to sing a karaoke song to defend the honor of Auburn, Georgia, what would be your go-to karaoke song?
Well, first of all, I can't carry a tune in my pocketbook, so I wouldn't be singing.
That's okay.
But
that's
the okay.
Beautiful thing about karaoke. Words are right in front of you, and no one expects it to sound fantastic.
I would probably have to go with, you know, an old Frank Sinatra song that we did it our way.
Okay.
Yeah, because I think there's a lot of expectations out there, you know, from other people outside of our city. And I get a lot of people that will say, well, you can't do that. Your citizens will never go for that. And I'm like, no, actually, our older citizens are the ones that are like, let's go. Let's do it. Come on. Let's move. Yeah. So we're very different.
So my way. Frank Sinatra.
Let's All do right. it.
What is your favorite meal or favorite dish?
Ooh, well, where I grew up in Rocky Point, it was mainly Italian. So I love Italian food to begin with.
Okay. We've narrowed it down to a category.
So it would probably be, which sadly I can't eat the way it should properly be prepared, but it's eggplant parmesan.
All right, eggplant parmesan. Yeah. Preferably from the island.
No. Now, I do love fish, so if I start thinking about Long Island, okay. then that's
then
a whole different thing.
Yeah. All right, we'll stick with the eggplant parmesan. Yeah. All right, final question. If you could attend any concert of any singer, group, band, any kind of performer, whether dead or alive, what concert would you like to attend?
Probably Chopin.
Chopin.
Yeah.
We're going way back. That might be the farthest back where you actually go as far as the person that's not been around the longest.
Oh, would that not be incredible?
Yeah.
That would be incredible.
Chopin.
This episode of Small Town Podcast is sponsored in part by Advanced Disposal. You often hear on these episodes about the challenges for small towns in providing service to its citizens. When you see an Advanced Disposal truck, you may think you just see trash, but what you are really witnessing is service in motion. With changing regulations and expenses, cities that once provided regular trash service are looking to professional organizations to handle this service. And many of those cities trust Advanced Disposal to provide. Advanced Disposal handles regular pickup and proper disposal of solid waste for cities large and small and businesses large and small all over the state of Georgia and throughout the southeastern United States and beyond. Advanced Disposal does not view small towns as simply customers, but as partners. Advanced Disposal regularly supports functions for the Georgia Municipal Association to help provide training opportunities for your government leaders, and they sponsor Small Town Podcast because they care about promoting small towns everywhere. Advanced Disposal is driven to deliver. To find out more about how Advanced Disposal can partner with you and your city or business, visit www.advanceddisposal.com.
All right, let's continue talking more specifically about Auburn. You got a lot of things going on. We've already talked about Auburn because obviously you're so engaged in it. Even though it was reluctant at first, it sounds like, which is a common story. What is it? I mean, you kind of said why you decided to move here, having nothing to do with being an elected official.
Right.
But what is it, maybe you get to see the internally, that makes Auburn so great and so unique as a small town?
Yeah, I do think it is the people. I mean, really and truly, that's Auburn captured my heart through the people of the past generations. That, I mean, we had a women's college in the early 1900s, 1902.
Yeah.
And that just fascinated me. I was like, 1902, we had a women's college? What? And then when I looked it up and found out, you know, it was huge. I mean, it was a big college.
So that's the college. I was going to bring this up because we're sitting in the conference room, and I'll have to say this because we're audio. You were showing me some of these the artist renderings of what's going to be new Auburn City Hall.
Yes.
And then you said the Auburn Center, which is going to have what kind of things in the Auburn Center?
The Auburn Center was the old dormitory to the college, that women's college I was speaking about. The top floor is already leased out, the entire top floor, to a wedding event planners, and the basement is already leased out. It's not even open yet.
Okay.
The basement is already leased out to two artists that do bas relief.
Okay.
And so the whole ground floor is for the community, and it will seat about 150 people in the conference room that's in there, or you can divide it up into smaller sections. And then on the far end of the building, that was actually an addition that was added to the dormitory in the 1950s when it was changed over to a manufacturing center.
Mm-hmm.
And that section will be used for our GED ESL classes.
So a lot of community use. And now this is being built from scratch, but the
No. This
it
one is
actually
renovated.
Rehab. Okay.
Yeah, this one is renovated, which we got through a CDBG.
So that was the original dormitory.
This is the original dormitory.
Okay, so that's the one you told me about before.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because we were talking about the infrastructure grants you've gotten. This is one of the things you're able to do.
Yeah.
Now, City Hall, you said, is being built from scratch. But it's the architecture is based on one of the buildings that was at that original
We actually
college.
Have the blueprints to the original. Building.
Okay.
And so we are rebuilding the Perry Rainey Institute, and it will serve as our police courtroom and city hall.
And when do you said construction is going to be starting at sometime in how
next
long?
Next year.
Next year, okay.
Yeah, we'll break ground next year. Well,
fantastic.
We have our 3-day charrette coming up next week. We're excited because we have a private developer that is going to do a mixed-use development behind our municipal complex. And so we're very excited. It's going to be very unique, not like Duluth, not like, you know, some of the other very successful cities that have sure. done that. But ours will be different than those.
So one's a yeah. rehab, one's from building from scratch based on the design, but both
yes.
Based on the design yeah. of that college.
Tell the story.
Yeah.
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 Of a woman's college and a dormitory.
Well, that's really neat.
Yeah. Yeah. Very excited about that. And so the people of Auburn remain, you know, you would think, okay, so these are now third and fourth generation people, some of them, you know, mm-hmm. that live here. A lot of course, new people have moved in, but...
Sure, people from New York and whatnot.
Yeah, you know, those Yankees, you know, I was told all about being a Yankee. You're just a Yankee if you come to visit, but you're a damn Yankee if you live here.
That's right.
So that's okay. I've resolved myself to that.
Well, it must be okay. They've elected you mayor 3 times, right?
I know, yeah. So that's
I should have asked this before. The time you're in for council and the 3 times now that you run for mayor, have you ever had yeah. opposition?
I did have opposition both for the council seat and the first time I ran for mayor. What was interesting is one of the council people, so it's council now, told me the reason he ran against me was because he did not think we needed a city administrator.
Oh,
and that was in the very beginning.
Just in that one issue.
And
wow.
Yeah. And so, but he's come to me since then and said, you know, I just apologize. We did. We needed a yeah. city administrator.
So he's now on your council and you
is.
Guys work fine together.
We do. Okay. Yeah.
Well, good.
Yeah.
I don't want to relive bad memories, but a question I've asked in the past is sometimes in small towns you can have some kind of controversial meetings. Now, I've asked this question before, and people said, no, actually, we get along just fine in the meetings, but you've already alluded to the fact that there were some, sounds like knockdown yeah. dragouts. What were some of the issues that got the most attention, I guess, from your council, some of the infighting, but even what was some of the issues, maybe ones that would be unexpected, things you didn't think were any big deal, and the public comes out in droves to oppose some kind of proposal
yeah,
or something like that?
Yeah, I was
going
to say, well, now, from the time that I served as mayor, we've not really had
right.
those problems. But when I was on council, I found out very quickly that garbage is a hot button issue. You are going to change garbage service, and you just better be ready for all your citizens that never show up to your regular meetings to be there. So that was really interesting to
because
me.
Because you were changing who the provider was? The
Yeah,
the,
there was
the
a...
The fee was going up? What was the issue?
No, it was the provider was going to be changed, and there was going to be a difference in how you handled your recyclables. And so that was really the big issue, was how it was going to be handled. And, you know, it was funny to me that it was something that had I known, you know, ahead of time that
right.
this was going to be a hot button issue, I would have been like, well, before we have a business meeting about it, let's just have
let's
like public information,
and, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
and just get all that input. But now I kind of know that you just want to kind of get that information in ahead of time.
Right.
yeah.
A so. Lot of the thing, well, you know, we all set out with, you know, some kind of big initiative. You in your first year getting involved, you got 5 parks started. That's great.
Yeah.
So those are the things we set out for, and the things that people will come to a council meeting and oppose vigorously ends up being something you might not have expected.
Yeah, just totally not. And you know, what's interesting is when we voted to put $1 million of infrastructure in the ground.
Nothing.
Crickets. Didn't hear a thing. You know.
Well, that's a good thing. You're,
that
you're
was
improving
a good
infrastructure.
Thing.
Probably
that
cost
was.
A little bit of
yeah.
money, but
the other one, you know, was that when we voted to go into this project to do this reservoir,
mm-hmm.
really the same thing. Not that citizens didn't have questions, but they would just, you know how it is in a small city. I go to my Ingles and go shopping, and I'm stopped 10 times,
right.
you know, during my shopping trip, ask questions, which is great. I love that. I mean, that's what I love about a small city, you know.
Right. Easier to give access because
yes.
there's fewer people
yes.
that yeah,
yeah.
you have
and
to give access
we
to.
We really do have an open door. We tell people all the time, my cell phone is on my business card.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm like, no, I actually want you to call me and talk to me if you have an issue or an idea or, you know, so we have great volunteers now. We put on 6 big events a year that hundreds of thousands of people come out to see, and be a part of, and it's great. I love it.
Well, you've got so much going on. You're in your third term. Any plans of stopping, or you're just going to keep going?
We'll see when the time comes.
when's your next term?
I have
in?
This year and next year.
Okay.
And then I have to.
So two more years to before you have to mind. Figure it
yeah.
out.
Yeah.
People ask me sometimes, "You're going to run for mayor?" And I said, "I just got reelected last year. Uh-huh. I got 3 years to figure it out. You know, it depends on the day whether I want to run."
And
again.
I understand that it's kind of like your police department wants to know. Everything going to stay the same? Are you going to run again? You know, and your builders, your investors, they want to know. You know, I mean,
if there's a change coming, that might mean instability. Yeah,
that
possibility.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what people are asking.
So I understand it. You know, but you know, I just really do feel like we, like I said before, we've accomplished almost all that we set out to accomplish in our first 10-year plan, mm-hmm. and now we're heading into the big developments, and one of the major goals was to even out our tax base and not rely so much on, we haven't raised our millage rate in 11 years, and we don't intend to, because I don't think that is where our income should come from.
Should be more diversified than just that.
You have to build your commercial, retail, and industrial, and we have the railroad going through our town, so we do have a couple of industrial properties, and once those come in and kind of fill that void, we'll be much more balanced out. But right now, our ad valorem taxes are only about 21% of our total income.
Yeah.
So our lost revenue is 35%.
That's I envy you.
Yeah.
We're not quite there.
yeah. So that's good.
So if someone were to come to Auburn, Georgia, mm-hmm. and they only had time to see one thing or experience one thing, whether that's a local festival or an event or the something of historic significance, a monument, a location, a building, anything like that, what would you want to make sure that someone coming to Auburn, one thing, what would that be?
Well, let me take that question and put it in two categories. If you have children, I would say you would definitely want to come to one of our festivals. We have Auburn Ever After, and we have, I think we're up to 40 different characters. Everything from Cinderella to Deadpool is here. We have a Cinderella carriage.
That's quite a mix between Cinderella and Deadpool.
We have Spider-Man, Batman, we have the Hulk, we have every princess that there is, Moana, everything.
Yeah.
And they are beautiful. They're all in costume. They all play it up perfectly. Tinkerbell, Peter Pan. And so if you have children, that is you do not want to miss that event. We have two carriages that the kids get to ride around in, an actual pumpkin carriage, or another one is just a horse-drawn, beautiful carriage. Mm-hmm. But we had to actually double up because it's so well attended that one carriage wasn't going to do it.
Right.
And if you are older and interested in history, I would definitely say our museum, which is just tells wonderful stories of our citizens and how we came to be. And it's just fun. It's very walkable. Our downtown, you can walk from our bicycle trailhead to, we have tennis right here, and then we have our museum. And then you have the library, and then you have the children's park. And if you come full circle, that's when you come to our whistle stop shops and our businesses that are located right next to City Hall downtown. And just a great feeling, great group of people. But you're always very welcomed here.
So as we close it up, I'll give you a chance to pitch to the audience why they should come visit or maybe even come live in one of the new developments coming up in Auburn, Georgia.
Yeah, well, as I said, the people here are great. You're welcomed here. It is not one of those cities that, you know, if you weren't born here, then you're not welcome here. Definitely not. And that's obvious by what you said before, that a Yankee has been elected four times in the city of Auburn. And then as far as living goes, the mixed-use developments that we're talking about, one of the most interesting studies we did is, what are senior citizens looking for? And what are millennials looking for? And we found out of, I think it was 17 items, there were only two things that were different. Hmm. So the communities that we're developing are all going to be walkable, more like little hamlets with shared green space, a lot of activities, going on for families, for the elderly, for they all, you know, senior citizens don't actually want to be out on their own and only have other senior citizens. They actually want to see kids. They want to see teenagers. They want to see young adults. They want to have interesting conversations and be out there playing bocce ball and, you know, all of those kinds of things. And so I thought that was really interesting, and that's what we're headed towards. And in addition to that, we're keeping our kind of green space, making sure that you can still see the stars at night. Everything is intentional. All the lighting will be down lighting so that when you're walking through your little area of town, you'll still be able to look up and see the stars in the sky. And I think that's so important to keep. That's a part of who we are, Auburn is, and why we moved out here to begin with. So why would you take that away, you know? And we also allow gentleman farms. And so we fortunately have the area and have the space. Yeah, so it's a great place. It fits everybody's needs. So come out and be a part of us.
Mayor Linda Blechinger and current GMA President, Madam President, thanks so much for being a part of Small Town Podcast.
Thank you, Mayor. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, small towners, that'll do it for this episode of Small Town Podcast. I want to thank Mayor Linda Blechinger for talking with me today. As always, we thank our season sponsors, the Georgia Municipal Association, the Southern Mercantile, and our newest sponsor, Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company, for continuing to support this project of exploring and sharing great small towns. I'll talk to you soon, and y'all are welcome to come to Osceola anytime.
Small Town Podcast is an Irwinomics production that tells the stories of America's great small towns. We release new episodes every other week, featuring small towns through stories of the people who live and lead there, and sometimes exploring issues that affect small towns everywhere. Our podcast episodes are made possible with editing assistance from Resonant Recordings, who also mixes and masters all of our episodes. You can subscribe to Small Town Podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast, and the next episode will download while you sleep. You can also leave us a rating and review, which would help us reach new listeners. We would really appreciate it. Beyond our episodes, you can hang out with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also learn more about us and the towns we visit by stopping by our website, www.smalltownpodcast.com. We love to show you all the small towners out there, some great images from the small towns we visit, and let you know about the festivals and events you can participate in and the places you hear about on our podcast. Thanks for listening, and we hope to see you real soon.
We stand adjourned.